Welcome to Shouts from the Back Row, the official podcast of the-back-row.com. My name is Gil, and I'm your host, and with me as always are my co-hosts Robin.
Hello.
And TK.
Hello.
It's that time of year again, folks. Oscar time has wrapped up. Now that the 85th Academy Awards have come and gone, the three of us are going to honor that annual Shouts from the Back Row tradition of looking back upon this year's Oscars and picking them apart. And man, this year's ceremony was a doozy. Was Seth MacFarlane too edgy for the Academy? Were there any surprises? And who do we think was snubbed? Hopefully, we'll be able to keep the conversation to under half the entire running time of the awards themselves. And it's all coming up next, right after these messages. The Back Row has a PayPal The Back Row has a PayPal account, and we're accepting donations. If you feel like throwing some of your hard-earned dollars our way, you can do so at The Back Row. Just go to the-back-row.com and click the Donate button in the right column. If you donate, you can choose a movie for us to review and even specify which of us gets to review it. Doesn't that sound like fun? So send us a few cents, and we'll review your favorite movie that was snubbed at the Oscars this year. Shouts from the Back Row is available through iTunes. If you search the iTunes store for the Back Row podcasts, you can subscribe to our feed, which will not only get you your weekly dose of media culture from us, but also Tom Lando's all-original audiobook podcast series Oathbreakers, and back episodes of our heavy metal podcast Drop D Revolution, and our surreality podcast The Tom Lando Files. Tell your friends and subscribe today. We like to open the show with a discussion of what we've been up to. This is a place for us to talk about movies we've been watching, TV shows we've been following, games we've been playing, and just about everything else we've been doing. So, TK, what have you been up to?
The only big thing I've been up to is I finished A Feast for Crows, the fourth book in the Song of Ice and Fire series, and about halfway through Dance of Dragons, which is book five. I really enjoyed Feast of Crows. A lot of people I heard didn't enjoy it as much, but I got a big kick out of a whole lot of weird secondary characters we don't hear from a lot. Dance of Dragons is awesome. It's nice to see a couple of the big characters come out in force again, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And after this, I'm actually going to finally finish the Wheel of Time series. I think I have four books to finish before that series is right up and done. And then that's all I've been up to in terms of reading. I dove back into Skyrim again. The bug bit me the other day, and I ended up back in. And
it happens to the best of us.
You know, I'm enjoying it as much as I did the first time around. So I'm playing a couple different ways again. It's like I remember the last time I got into I played Fallout New Vegas for a long, long time, and then just completely ignored it for a while. And whenever I run through a game like Fallout or Skyrim, I usually play a sneaky sniper character or a magic user. And then last time I booted up Fallout, I thought, screw this, I'm going to hit people with clubs. And that's my approach to this run in Skyrim, is I'm going to hit things with axes.
That was my first character, was a dual wielder.
Which is fun. Like, I'm really enjoying it because it's a completely different play style. And so opened up a whole bunch of quest lines I didn't have any access to before. So I'm enjoying it. I'm really having a good time. Other than that, that's all I've been up to, guys. It's I was busy last week with Oscar films, and this was a bit of a lull. So how about you guys? What have you been up to?
Robin, what have you been up to?
Well, I've caught up on a couple movies. I finally got a chance to watch Magic Mike. I suddenly got in the mood to watch that after seeing Steven Soderbergh's Side Effects. And I like this movie, like, a lot better than I thought I would. Like, I know it got good reviews, but I was still kind of skeptical about it. But a lot of people initially thought that it was going to be kind of like a male stripper version of Showgirls. But it is way more intelligent than Showgirls. It is a very interesting character study, and I kind of like the different arc it showed, where it's not so much the rise and fall of a character, but like the story of a character who's found success in his industry, and he has to find the courage to get out of his routine and leave it and move on with his life. And I thought Channing Tatum was like really good in this lead role. Like the guy has really grown on me this last year. Like I liked him in 21 Jump Street, and he was very convincing in this one. It was a much more serious and dramatic role, and it's probably because it's kind of loosely based on his life, because he was a stripper when he was a lot younger, but I thought he was, like, very convincing. And obviously Soderbergh has done a lot for him because he also cast him in solid roles in Haywire and Side Effects. So, yeah, Channing Tatum really impressed me in this. And also Matthew McConaughey. He was also terrific as well as the club MC. And he's had quite a year as well with this and Killer Joe. So here are two guys that I normally am not a big fan of showing a lot more acting chops than I thought they had. So for that alone, this movie definitely gets a thumbs up. Yeah, it's not a particularly invigorating movie. Like, it does kind of have a predictable arc, but it tells its story very well. It's not a movie that I'll revisit too often, but I liked it, like, a lot more than I thought it would. So if you think this is going to be, like, a kind of a sleazy showgirls coyote ugly movie, no, it's actually a lot better than that.
I mean, I've heard pretty good things as well, and I did hear that Matthew McConaughey was quite good. I still need to see Side Effects, but I liked Channing Tatum in those movies you mentioned as well. So, yeah, I'm experiencing the same kind of wonder that you are, Robin, at how somehow these actors who I really never cared for at all, just even over the past year, have really started to impress me.
Yes, definitely. Who knows? Maybe Channing Tatum will be an Oscar nominee next year. Stranger things have happened. another movie that I saw recently finally was Taken 2, and this is a movie that's gotten like a lot of bad reviews, but I have to confess I had a lot of fun watching this one, though it may have been for the wrong reasons. I personally found this movie hilarious. I don't know how much of it was the humor was intended, but I did get a lot of laughs watching it, because it has just so many absurd situations. Like, Taken 1 was not exactly like the height of realism, but Taken 2 has so many situations that are just ridiculous, particularly involving the character of Kim. I found it quite hilarious at the beginning that I always thought she was too old to be playing a teenager in Taken 1, and they're still trying to do that here, and the movie starts off with her, like, with her dad trying to show her how to take her driver's test, and also getting very insecure because she has a new boyfriend, and I just thought it was kind of weird because Maggie Grace in real life is nearly 30 years old, so I just thought it was kind of creepy that this guy is upset that his 30-year-old daughter is getting, like, a boyfriend, but it got much more sillier when they got to Istanbul. I particularly love the whole concept that Liam Neeson and his wife are kidnapped, and he is guiding Kim over the phone to figure out how to break out, and he just tells her to go to certain parts throughout Istanbul to throw grenades just so that he can pick up on the sound and help guess, like, her location and try to guide her closer to where they're being held. And it's just hilarious that she's just throwing these grenades, could have very well killed a bunch of innocent people, and they never, like, attract attention of the police. It's just so hilarious. And the chase scene is also hilarious, where the whole driver's test thing kind of pays off because he has to guide her to drive through Istanbul where they're being chased and they're being shot at. And the whole scene where they go to the U.S. embassy and, like, crash through the front gate is quite hilarious because I kept thinking, you're a U.S. citizen. You could just say you need asylum and they'll let you in. You don't have to, like, risk your daughter's life by making all these military guys shoot at you while you crash through the gates. And then he basically calls his friend in the States and says, can you just call the embassy and explain that we're okay and not to shoot at us? And then everything turns out fine. And I also like how incompetent the bad guys in this were. We're basically, they're holding his wife at gunpoint and holding guns on him, and Liam Neeson still has time to take out his cell phone and talk for like 2 or 3 minutes to his daughter, giving her instructions on where to hide, and they just stand there and let him do it, and then they capture him and they don't notice that he's got a cell phone hidden on him, and they leave him alone for himself for like half an hour so he can break out and talk to his daughter on the phone. It's just hilarious how incompetent they were. So, yeah, I don't know what to say about this. It's not a good movie, technically, but it is a fun way to kill 90 minutes. And if you like the first Taken, you'll probably be satisfied with the sequel. And it was a lot more satisfying than A Good Day to Die Hard. I'll give it that. So, yeah, if you like the first Taken, check out Taken 2. It's good, dumb fun.
Good, dumb fun is basically my 3-word review of it as well. I don't know what people were expecting, because the first Taken, while an awesome action movie, is not like a masterpiece of a film. And I feel like a lot of people had much higher expectations of Taken 2 than it actually ever deserved.
Yeah, I can definitely watch a whole series of this. Like, it's a very simple formula. It's just Liam Neeson rescues his family, and that's all they really need. And as long as these movies are profitable, I'm sure they're going to make more of them. And because they deliver the goods for the audience, and that's all you really need. And yeah, that's about all I've been up to.
I took in a few movies over the past week. I was in sort of a horror movie mood. So I watched two creepy kid films. The first film features Academy Award nominee Jessica Chastain. The film is Mama, which is a movie produced by Guillermo del Toro, but not directed by him. And when I saw that del Toro was producing, I was a bit skeptical because Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, I think to date the other sort of big horror movie that was only produced by Guillermo del Toro, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark was not a great movie. I really was not impressed by it at all. So I was pretty skeptical about Mama, but then it actually got sort of half-decent praise, and I decided to check it out, and you know what? This is a really solid horror movie. It's a horror movie that doesn't muck around. There's no wasted time. I'll say mild spoilers, but I mean, you get this much from the trailer, for Mama at least. It's a ghost movie. There's this like creepy ghost mama who follows these kids who were abandoned by their father in a cabin in the woods. And they, over the years, they become feral and this ghost becomes their surrogate mother. And, the movie wastes no time in establishing this ghost and just playing the ghostly scares up for all they're worth. There are a lot of jump scares in this, but there are no false alarm scares. There are no, you know, jump scares where, oh, it was just the cat or anything like that. Like, when there's a jump scare, it's actually really creepy because the design of Mama is so terrifying. It's a really scary design. And, yeah, overall, I found this to be, like, a really solid horror movie, a really solid ghost film. It sort of reminded me of Insidious, which is another movie that's smart, but it doesn't overextend itself. It doesn't try to, you know, be a really cerebral horror movie. It just revels in having fun scaring you with people in creepy makeup and stuff like that and scary ghosts. And the story as a whole is both effective and very satisfying. And these are some of the creepier creepy kids that I've ever seen on film. So if you like horror movies, I definitely give Mama a recommendation. I mean, it's kind of generic. Like, even the color scheme of the film and the way it's shot is very stereotypical horror movie. But and it features the creepy kids cliche, which is such a cliche in horror movies these days. Creepy kids. I think it's Vince Mancini of the Film Drunk blog says that any horror movie these days, it's either Haunted House or Creepy Kids, and this is sort of a bit of both. But in spite of all these cliches and the very generic elements of it, Mama is really effective, and it scared me. It scared me. It has a cool ending too. I gotta say, I'm glad that the filmmakers had the conviction to really give it an effective and dark ending, which was fun. So, Robin, have you seen Mama?
No, I didn't. And I was kind of skeptical about it because I was thinking Jessica Chastain's following up this like Oscar nominated role with like this January horror film. But it's gotten better reviews than I expected. And I'm glad to hear you liked it as well. So I'm anxious to check it out.
And I've actually got to say, I think this was one of Jessica Chastain's more effective performances. I actually thought she gave a really solid performance. This is so far the only Jessica Chastain performance where I really forgot that it was Jessica Chastain. Like, I bought her character through and through, which was great. The other creepy kid film that I watched is one that was produced by Sam Raimi. It stars, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name. He played the comedian in Watchmen.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, that's the fellow. It stars him, it's The Possession, and it's about a Dybbuk box, which is this demon from Jewish folklore, this just really evil demon that can be locked in a cabinet or a box and contained within. But if you open it, of course, you release this demon. So the story of The Possession is a little girl finds a Dybbuk box for sale at a garage sale, and she buys it, and the demon possesses her. And then we get to watch as her family sees her go slowly crazy and do very scary things. And as you would expect, the father catches on to this early, but no one believes him because it's a demon. The plot of the movie is actually quite routine for this sort of thing. If you've seen a horror film that has those elements, like, you've definitely seen The Possession. There are a few scares. This is a PG-13 horror movie, and those ones can be really hit and miss. Some of them, like Drag Me to Hell, very effective. Others, really not. And I didn't find this one as scary as some of the better entries in the PG-13 horror movie, I guess, subgenre. But there are some good shots, except, you know what, I think they actually, thinking back on it, they give away all the really good stuff in the trailer, so just watch the trailer for The Possession, and you can skip the movie. And then finally, I watched a kid's movie, in stark contrast to the horror films that I've been watching. This was the animated film Rise of the Guardians. And this is, boy, what an unusual movie. I can't remember which reviewer said this, but there was a critic who described it as Avengers for the elementary school set. And that's really what it is it's a very Avengers-like story, but instead of Iron Man and Thor and all those Marvel superheroes, it's Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny, the Sandman, and Jack Frost. And Jack Frost is the new guy character. He's voiced by Chris Pine. Now, this movie makes some really interesting choices, very creative interpretations of these sort of, I hesitate to call them folkloric characters, like a lot of sort of holiday-associated characters, and then I guess the Tooth Fairy is sort of a more folkloric character, but this interesting set of characters all have really creative interpretations. For example, Santa Claus, voiced by Alec Baldwin, in the movie he goes by the name of North, and he's like a Russian Viking Santa, and he wields two sabers and has a big Ushenka hat and speaks with a Russian accent, and he has tattoos all over his forearms. That's like really an interesting interpretation of Santa Claus, and certainly one I'd never heard before. And on top of that, the elves in his factory are like little gremlin-y kind of guys, and they don't make the toys. An army of Yetis makes Santa's toys. So totally bizarre there. And like the Sandman, he's mute, and he does almost like a Harpo Marx sort of shtick, and he can conjure up these dream things, like almost like the Green Lantern, just like whatever he can imagine, and he conjures it up out of this dream sand. So Jack Frost has become a new one of these sort of elemental creatures, or guardians, as the title says, the most generic title ever. Jack Frost is the new guy, and he meets up with the Tooth Fairy. Oh, I got to give special mention, actually, to the Easter Bunny, who is a man-sized Australian boomerang-throwing Easter Bunny, voiced by Hugh Jackman. And in his domain is like in the center of the Earth, which you can access through rabbit holes. And when you get down to the Easter Bunny's domain, it's like a beautiful spring garden full of eggs, and then also filled with these giant two-legged stone statue eggs that have rotating faces on them. Like, what were the animators on? It was just so bizarre. But and the villain is a character called Pitch. Pitch Black, the boogeyman, voiced by Jude Law, and voiced really well by Jude Law. And he is very much a Loki type character. Like, he's kind of witty and clever. Lots of cool magic that he can do, and he loves to taunt the heroes. It really is just, it's sort of like action set piece after action set piece, and in between action set pieces, there are these little bits of, Jack Frost going, "Who am I?" and discovering all these different guardian realms. Now, overall, I'd say the movie was pretty fun, and it was definitely worth it for these bizarre interpretations of these sort of popular characters. But I was really curious as to where these ideas came from, because they're just so outlandish. And I looked into it. I believe the author's name is William Joyce. I think 2011 was the first time he wrote one, but he's this author who started writing a series of children's books called The Guardians of Childhood, where he reinterprets all of these characters as, like, superheroes. And he was saying that it occurred to him, the idea came to him when he'd tell his son bedtime stories. And it occurred to him that everybody knows, like, Batman's origin story, but nobody knows Santa Claus's origin story. These other superheroes that have been around for so long, these sort of holiday heroes, you know, why shouldn't they also be superheroes in their own right? Now, I think it's a really interesting idea. I don't think that the movie totally works, but as I said, there's a lot of really sort of fun, energetic action scenes in it, which is cool. And mainly it's just these weird character interpretations that I have to recommend it for, because they're not anything like anything I'd seen before. It's very interesting. And it's a shame that they gave it such a generic title as Rise of the Guardians, because frankly, I think The Guardians of Childhood would have made an awesome title and really summed up what the movie was about. But Rise of the Guardians made me think of Legend of the Guardians, that animated owl movie from a few years back, which was also just totally flat and generic. And I don't know, it's almost like, you know, just you can't really put the word guardian in the title of your movie and then expect people to notice that it has these bizarre characters in it, because it just sounds so flat and generic. Overall, it's a decent film. I think if I'd seen this when I was in elementary school, I'd probably think it was really, really cool. As it is, it's very interesting, very unusual, but never boring and quite entertaining. DreamWorks fare. So now let's talk about the 85th Annual Academy Awards. And boy, we have a lot to talk about. It was a really interesting Oscar night. I figured perhaps the best way to start would be to talk a little about the host. I mean, the Oscar host is such a part of the Academy Awards. And this year they got Seth MacFarlane, the creator of Family Guy, to host the Oscars in a really odd move, I think. I mean, not that I ever doubted that Seth MacFarlane would be funny, because he is a very funny guy, but it was a really odd choice on the Academy's part. So, perhaps I should, here, I'll put it this way. Seth MacFarlane does this great big opening monologue, and in it, Captain Kirk, as played by William Shatner, sends a message back from the future, or like a transmission back from the future, warning MacFarlane that if he does things wrong, he'll ruin the Oscars. And as proof, Kirk shows him a headline where it says, you know, here's tomorrow's headline, Seth MacFarlane, worst Oscar host ever. And over the course of that opening bit, MacFarlane tries different things, which we'll talk about in a minute, to change the headline, change the future. And the headline goes through several iterations. First, he's the worst host ever, and then he's just a bad host, and then he's a mediocre host, and it ends off with best Oscars ever, except for Entertainment Weekly. So, guys, which headline is the most accurate?
I don't know. I wouldn't call him mediocre. I wouldn't call him best ever, but he was a refreshing change. He was something different. I'll give him that. Like, I just found the whole opening, like, just, I never seen what could be described as a meta Oscar ceremony before, where it's like, though, all the jokes are predicated on the fact that everyone's gonna call Seth MacFarlane a bad host, because he starts off making these jokes about, like, Chris Brown and Rihanna and stuff. that are offensive, and everyone's kind of groaning and stuff. But then when William Shatner does his bit, you're like, oh, those were supposed to be offensive jokes. So this is all part of it. They're making fun of the fact that people are expecting him to do this stuff. A lot of that stuff was entertaining. Like, some of his jokes fell, like, really flat. But I cannot say, though, that I was, like, particularly offended. Like, I've seen Seth MacFarlane's work, and this is pretty toned down from what he normally does. I know a lot of people are decrying his musical number of We Love Boobs and stuff, and all I could think about was, wow, I'm surprised he didn't make a joke about Emmanuel Riva showing her boobs in Amour. Like, I'm thinking, wow, Seth MacFarlane actually pulled back a little bit on that musical number. And I actually saw one column where they were complaining that, oh, they cut to a reaction shot of Charlize Theron in the crowd, and she was, like, so offended by it. And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was pre-taped. She was wearing, like, different clothes than she did at the ceremony, so someone totally missed the point. So it was a mixed bag overall, but I enjoyed it more than I didn't enjoy it, and it was just so much different from your typical, like, bland Oscar ceremony that I'm happy that they tried it, at least.
TK, I know you were looking forward to this. What did you think of MacFarlane?
Out of the last four Oscar ceremonies I've really watched, so Billy Crystal, Franco and Hathaway, and Martin and Baldwin. Am I missing one? No, that's it. Seth is my favorite host out of the four I've watched. I thought he was funny. He was offensive as per a Seth MacFarlane show should be. A lot of people are giving him shit about a variety of things that, you know, I feel that some of them are valid and I don't feel that others are, but I'm not going to get into them right now. I thought he was a really good breath of fresh air host, and I really thought that he pulled a lot of stuff off well, and his singing voice is magnificent, and considering the Oscars, the theme of the Oscars this year was music and film, like, I can't think of anyone else that they could have done that would have done this as much justice. I think he was a great host. I'd like to see him come back and do something else, as long as there's musical theater involved in it. But overall, I was very impressed with MacFarlane, and I'm looking forward to seeing if he does any more hosting like that. Because he was way better than I was expecting him to be. But it was I got a bunch of good laughs, and I'm sorry, he made a joke that just killed me about the Coppola family having something like 27 Oscars between every member of them. And then, can you imagine being a kid in that family? I got an A in Spanish. Everyone you're related to has an Oscar. I really like that one. I thought he was clever, and I thought it was funny. So good on you, MacFarlane. I thought you did a great job.
It's like he couldn't decide between going with his usual brand of edgy comedy and more traditional Oscar host comedy. And you can even see it in his opening bit, where he clearly wants to do those gags, like the "I've seen your boobs, I've seen your boobs" musical number, which I thought was really funny, and I think a lot of people are taking it out of context, but it's like he's using the Captain Kirk from the future gag to do his usual brand of comedy, but in a way that distances him from it, because on the stage he's not performing that. You know, he's just showing a video of it. On the stage he's doing something much more traditional, a little soft shoe number with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Daniel Radcliffe, for example. So, I don't know. It really, like you said, Robin, it's a mixed bag, and I feel like it almost came out balanced between the stuff that really didn't work and the stuff that really did work. We'll talk about this later on after we talk more about the ceremony. We're going to talk about the Oscars and are they still relevant. And I feel like Seth MacFarlane was kind of like stunt casting, like the Oscars really wanted to appeal to a younger crowd. But the funny thing is that all the stuffy Hollywood types that were in the audience clearly don't like that. They clearly don't care about appealing to the younger crowd, because so many of MacFarlane's jokes, even the ones that I thought were really funny, so many of them bombed really badly. So some of his jokes bombed. Some may have been inappropriate or tasteless, but does that really surprise anyone? This is the guy, creator of Family Guy. But at the same time, I laughed a lot harder at the jokes that worked than I have in recent years with the Oscars. Like you said, TK, I too found MacFarlane to be livelier and get bigger laughs than Billy Crystal last year. and certainly bigger than Anne Hathaway and James Franco. It was interesting to see some of that pop culture humor, like Captain Kirk turning up at the Oscars. And I think it was kind of unfortunate how unimpressed with him everybody in the audience seemed to be, except for Jennifer Lawrence, who didn't care. And I mean, that's just because she rules. But yeah, I'm with you guys. Like, overall, I ended up enjoying it. It's almost like McFarlane tried to do what Ricky Gervais did at the Golden Globes and do some like really biting and inappropriate humor. But I guess the Academy is not quite ready for that just yet. Any other thoughts on McFarlane? I mean, he's probably going to come up more as we talk here. But overall, you guys think he was a decent one? Would you want to see him come back next year?
Yes, I would. Like, I have a feeling that with all the controversy, you won't, but I read that ratings went high up, higher because he was there, so maybe that'll make him come back. But yeah, it was something different. Like, that's kind of the same way I feel about most of his work, like Family Guy, where some of it some of it bombs, some of it doesn't work, but there's a lot of really, really funny stuff in it, so like the funny stuff makes it worthwhile.
As inappropriate as it was, I thought his jab at Mel Gibson was actually really funny. I mean, yes, that's very inappropriate, but I can't. Every late night host has made a joke about it, so why can't Seth MacFarlane as well? And I thought it was pretty good, that one.
Maybe you guys can help me. The one thing that's been bugging me is I did not get that joke when Ted came out and he was sitting on a stool and they had the joke, is Ed Harris here? And they said no, and it says, well, I guess I don't have to leave the stool. Like, I didn't get that one at all. Did you guys get it?
No, I didn't understand that one either. I have no idea. TK?
I got nothing.
Apparently the orgy at Jack Nicholson's house joke has also caused quite a bit of controversy. Controversial, definitely the most controversial the Oscars have been in years, but then again, probably the most talked about they've been in years too.
Nah, that's true, that's all that matters.
TK, I'm betting you'd watch another year with McFarlane as host, huh?
Sure I would, but I think I like that the host changes every year with the Oscars. I'm a big fan of that, so you know, if Seth comes back in 2, 3, 4 years, that's fantastic, but if he comes back next year, that's fine as well.
I found it to be a good ceremony, and probably one of the more interesting and exciting ones than in recent years. I'd watch Seth MacFarlane host again, but like you, TK, I'd be really interested to see who they bring in next year, because I do like having rotating hosts. Gives it some variety. And frankly, as much as I liked Billy Crystal hosting the multiple years that he did, you know, way back when he came back last year, it was just sort of like, nah, move it along, you know, it felt kind of stale. So, yeah, I too would love to see some different hosts, but I would not be averse to watching Seth MacFarlane again. So, now the ceremony at large, clocking in at right around 3 hours as per usual. I made extensive notes while I was watching the ceremony, so I got tons of comments here. But I don't know, overall, guys, did you like the ceremony? Did you think it was well-paced? Did it drag? Did you get bored?
Yes, like this was 1 year when it stuck out to me where I was thinking, like, I know it's untraditional for, like, an Oscar telecast to end on time, but all I could think was this so could have ended, like, at 11:30 on time if it wasn't for all the musical numbers. And I kept thinking at the beginning that, oh, my God, that's going to be the theme of the night, so we're going to get a lot of gratuitous musical numbers. And some of them are cool. Like, I was really happy to see Shirley Bassey come out and sing Goldfinger.
Oh, she was so good.
Yeah, like I read she's 76, but she's still like sang it so well. That was the highlight of the night. But the whole tribute to famous movie musicals where they just randomly went through Les Miserables and then they just said, we're going to do a number from Chicago and then we're going to do like a solo from Dreamgirls. Like that was just so pointless. Like I kept thinking, oh, maybe this is going to be production number where they do 30-second snippets of like all these famous musical numbers. But it's no, we're just going to do the entire musical number from like a couple of movies, even though it doesn't really fit in with like the anything else going on. We're just gonna pad some time by doing some gratuitous musical numbers.
I actually, I was listening to the Slash Filmcast's review of the Oscars and found out an interesting fact, which is the producers of the Oscars this year were also the producers of Chicago.
Oh,
explain something, doesn't it? Because there was a lot of Chicago stuff in the ceremony. But also, apparently, the connection between Chicago, Dreamgirls, and Les Mis is that each movie won a Best Supporting Actress award.
Okay.
Just a random connection, but there was some connection. I thought that was interesting as well, because really, Les Mis was the only one relevant to this year. And while we're on the subject, I thought the Les Miserables musical number at the Oscars was actually a better recording than at the movie. I liked it a lot better than the rendition from the film.
Russell Crowe.
But you know what? He wasn't half bad at the Oscars. Certainly not to the degree that I disliked him in the film.
I liked Russell Crowe. And I liked it, like, I don't know. I enjoyed him a lot in Les Mis, and I liked him last night on stage. So screw all you guys.
Oh, hey, I'm half there, half with you. TK, were there any? The ceremony as a whole, was it overlong in your opinion, as it tends to be?
No, actually, I thought, when did it end? 11:30 or something? Like, it was not long. I felt
it was midnight. I think it was like,
yeah, it was
three
close
and
to
half
midnight.
Hours.
I didn't think it. It's the musical numbers I thought kind of dragged out. I'm in your case, Robin. I would have liked to have seen snippets as opposed to whole songs. But Adele fucking knocked it out of the park, to be honest.
And her thank you speech was really kind of cute too, where she started crying and said, "I can't do this. I love my man. You take over."
No, it was good. Other than, like I said, other than what I just mentioned, I think the ceremony was pretty well paced, to be honest. There were a couple transitions that were a little jumpy. Like whenever they did Dustin Hoffman, Charlize Theron, that was they could have done that. That eased into a lot better.
Now, I really like James Bond, and Skyfall was actually present at the awards. But I thought it was interesting that they dedicated that chunk of time to, you know, looking back upon the Bond franchise, since Bond only ever wins the technical awards anyway. It almost reminded me of, I can't remember if it was, I think it was 2 years ago, where they did a tribute to horror movies at the Academy Awards, as if to say, like, well, we're paying tribute, but we're never gonna, like, actually give a significant award to these things.
Then we're gonna show a clip from Twilight and make all horror fans.
Yeah, exactly. Quite out of touch. I gotta say, though, I did love that Halle Berry said, what was it, that James Bond was about, you know, action, fast cars, and pussy galore.
Yeah.
I really liked that she got away with saying pussy galore at the Oscars.
I wonder how many people who didn't get the reference were offended by that. Oh my god, she didn't say that, did she?
I'm shocked there isn't more controversy about that. I mean, frankly, I thought that was a much more blatant rip the censors than anything McFarlane was doing.
Apparently, there was a five-second delay on the
Always. Yep.
Oh, really? They didn't have that when Melissa Leo was up a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So I was kind of upset because, like, I heard them bleep out. Someone cursed on the red carpet lineup. I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
Oh.
I'm like, this isn't live?
While we're on the subject of that Bond bit as well, when introducing Halle Berry, I was really hoping McFarlane's bit where he's like, the most beautiful woman on the planet, my favorite Bond girl. I was really hoping it was going to lead up to a Judi Dench reveal, because that would have been pretty great.
Yeah.
So here, I got tons of notes. Why don't we just go through them, because they're all chronological of the ceremony anyway, just the things that I noted down. I found that a lot of the presenters' jokes fell flat. Did you guys find that? Like Paul Rudd and Melissa McCarthy?
That was terrible. That was painful. So bad. I'm like, I live tweeted the whole Oscars, and that was that was like, Rudd, what the fuck are you doing? You can stop now.
That was really bad. And while I enjoyed the cast of the Avengers doing their shtick, I couldn't tell what was like meant to be a joke and what was something they started stepping on each other's lines at the end. And there were a few jabs at age and self-abuse that both – it almost seemed like Samuel L. Jackson was semi-offended by something. And he was like, oh, Robert, how long did you abuse yourself? et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I found that a lot of the presenters were kind of lackluster this year.
It was almost like I felt at some places that there was something wrong with the teleprompter, because you would see these awkward pauses and delays as if their lines weren't coming up properly and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, totally. And in the Avengers bit, Ruffalo is actually, Samuel L. Jackson is about to do something, and Ruffalo goes, "Wait, you skipped a big chunk." Like, it did seem like there were a few teleprompter mishaps, including one where Seth MacFarlane was like, he saw the joke come up and he said, "I thought we had taken this joke out, but I guess we're going for it." And then he made the joke about how Ben Affleck with a lot of, he saw Ben Affleck with a lot of facial hair and thought, when did the Kardashians make a movie or something like that?
Yeah.
So I wonder if there were some difficulties with the teleprompter, because that would certainly explain a lot.
Well, Kristen Stewart looked pretty out of it, but that's not a surprise, really.
She was probably on painkillers, because I think she must have broken her leg or something. She was on crutches that night.
She had glass embedded in one of her feet.
Oh, my God. And yeah. Her hair was insane, though. She really looked like she had just, like, fallen out of bed or something to come and deliver that presentation. So, hey, guys. Christoph Waltz won Best Supporting Actor.
Yes!
That hit me right out of left field. I'm like I'm clapping. I'm like, what just happened?
He's two for two in both nominations and wins. As I was watching his thank you speech, he thanked Tarantino a hell of a lot. And for a moment, it seemed like a lot of the audience almost thought it was awkward. And for a moment, I thought it was kind of awkward. But then I was like, but Tarantino is responsible for both of his Oscars. So hell, if I were him, I'd thank Tarantino as well. I don't know, did you guys find it at all awkward? The audience was really sort of cold, I thought.
No, I didn't think it was awkward at all. Like, I found it kind of endearing that, like, this is the second time he's won, so he's been through this before, but he seemed more emotionally drained by this one the second time around, because he probably was definitely expecting it the first time because he was a shoo-in, but I guess this time maybe he wasn't expecting it and it took him off guard.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't expecting it, and he really did seem very humbled. It was quite sweet, especially thanking the other nominees in the category. He just seemed, like, so reverent. And rightfully so, because, man, what a lineup this year. There were so many good actors as in that category that I guess I can understand Waltz just being floored that, oh, man, you know, I beat out Alan Arkin. What the heck?
Yeah, he was my pick on the last Oscar cast, but deep in my heart, I was kind of like, yeah, I'm probably just doing that wishful thinking. He's probably not going to win. So I was very pleasantly surprised when he did. But I guess it helped that there was no real shoe-in this year. It was kind of hard to call because these were all former Oscar winners, so there wasn't any obvious pick.
Yeah, totally. I mean, he was certainly my dream pick, but I never thought that the Academy would go two for two. And for a couple of Tarantino movies, too, ones that deal with, like, some of his most controversial material, like killing Hitler and slavery. It was very surprising to me that the Academy would honor Waltz, and certainly not because he didn't give a good performance, because, man, he gave an awesome performance, and I want to see what he follows it up with. I guess now, this is good news for us. Now he has to just keep making Tarantino movies, because Tarantino will just keep giving him Oscars, apparently.
Yeah. No more of the Green Hornet or the Three Musketeers.
Yeah, heck with that stuff. Just keep doing Tarantino films, man. It works for you, and you're great in them.
I kind of wondered, I know that Tommy Lee Jones was kind of pegged as a favorite, so I wonder kind of if his surly demeanor cost him the award, because people were kind of thought, oh, he's going to go up there and he's going to look grumpy and stuff, so maybe we're going to give it to the guy who's going to be more grateful for it.
What killed me about this category is, like, I wanted De Niro to win, and I thought, because Tommy, like you were just saying, Robin, Tommy Lee was really pegged, I thought, to win this. So it, but the thing that I heard, that I forget where I was reading it. I actually think it was that article. Gil sent us an article earlier about someone on the Academy who was actually filling out his ballot, and a reporter did an article on it.
Actually, let me just jump in here and say this is an article called "The Oscar Voters' Brutally Honest Ballot" from the Hollywood Reporter. You can find it by searching the Hollywood Reporter site. And yes, one director shares his choices, calling Argo a whole lot of nothing, saying Django Unchained is Tarantino masturbating, and passing on Amour because there's only so much diaper changing I can tolerate. We'll get more into this later, but that's how you can find the article.
But the thing that he said about Waltz, whenever he was filling out his choice for Best Supporting Actor, he's saying giving it to Waltz is not fair because he's a co-star. The time between him and Fox on screen is almost equal, so it doesn't matter. He's not a supporting role. He's a larger role, which is why I'm going to give it to someone else. And I can see that. So that's why like I said, this hit me right out of left field. I was really not expecting Waltz to win it at all. And it was like, I'm super pumped he is. But it just really surprised me. But good for him. Like, I'm so glad. 2 for 2. Great. Good for you. Welcome to Hollywood, Waltz. Like, there you go. You know?
Absolutely. More Tarantino films. So let's see. This is just something that I noted, for the best animated short category, the guy who won for Paperman had a good jab at the Academy in his speech where he said, I'd like to thank the Academy because they actually got all the animated shorts out to the voters this year. However sad Ouch. It is, if you look at the brutally honest, Oscar voter ballot on Hollywood Reporter, he didn't watch the animated shorts and he voted for Paperman just because he heard Paperman was good. So I kind of wonder, if that's how Paperman won. I mean, Paperman was great. My personal favorite was, I think I actually posted on the back row, it was called Guacamole, and it shows a guy making guacamole out of, like, dice and a grenade and a cue ball and things like that. But yeah, I really wonder how much of Paperman's success just came from people saying, well, I heard it was great, I'm not going to bother watching it.
Apparently Adam and Dog was supposed to be outstanding.
I haven't seen that one, but I really need to see it. I love all the shorts. I really do. I feel like they often get quite shafted, as noted right now. So we already talked about the Bond tribute. Did Seth MacFarlane say that Halle Berry was one of his favorite Bond girls? Man, he's got no taste. She was really not a great Bond girl at all. I've decided I actually really love the best documentary short category because the filmmakers are always very passionate and they're always kind of blubbery and sniffly. This year they were all up there and we just like to thank everybody and it's so endearing. And, it made me think, it reminded me of, the 2010 Oscars when a documentary short called Music by Prudence won. And a lady in a purple dress pulled like a Kanye West and stole the microphone from the winner. That was amazing. So, yeah. You know what? Documentary short, even if I haven't seen all the documentary shorts, it's becoming one of my favorite parts of Oscar night. Because it seems to be the time when crazy things might happen. Ben Affleck presented the Best Documentary Feature Award. And he took a jab at Seth MacFarlane. When he came up, he said, you know, I thought the show was going really, really well, Seth, but maybe you can turn it around now. Did you guys catch that? What do you think of that?
I couldn't tell if he was saying it in good jest or if he was legitimately pissed. I seem to remember there was something similar years ago when Chris Rock hosted and he made some joke about Jude Law being in every single film released that year. And then Sean Penn came up all surly saying, well, Jude Law is a very talented performer, blah, 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 blah. He deserves to be in a lot of movies. This kind of felt like the same thing where it's like, God, do you have a sense of humor or is this part of the act? But it was uncomfortable to say the least.
It was uncomfortable. I wonder if it was because the joke in the opening monologue at Ben's expense where MacFarlane said that the director of Argo is so obscure he's unknown to the Academy.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, to be fair, that while that is a joke about Ben Affleck, I think that's really a joke in his defense. Who knows?
Exactly.
As another aside, now that I'm thinking about it, I kind of loved where, MacFarlane tossed a mini bottle of booze to George Clooney, and Clooney started opening it and drinking it. That was pretty good. Actually, and while I'm talking about that was his follow-up to, I think it was the Lincoln joke he made that bombed, where he said the only actor besides Daniel Day-Lewis to really get inside Lincoln's head was John Wilkes Booth.
I'm sorry, that was hilarious.
And the crowd didn't like it. And he even said, whoa, 150 years? Still too soon, huh?
Yeah.
I got some Napoleon jokes coming out that you're going to hate. But I thought it was hilarious too, and it, very surprising that people reacted the way they did, since that meme about Lincoln historically not doing well in theaters, like, that's been around for a while now. So I'm surprised that that one kicked up some controversy. And, you know, people are actually offended by this. I was reading, like, Entertainment Weekly user comments, E! Online, The New Yorker, and people were, like, really not pleased at all by that Lincoln joke. Shocking, shocking. It seemed like Daniel Day-Lewis was laughing his head off, though.
It's quite funny how, like, he made a joke just like that on Family Guy, where Brian makes a joke about, oh, that whole skit was lamer than FDR's legs, and everyone gasps, and he says, too soon? And here we have an actual real-life situation where it happened, where he's poking fun of, like, making jokes of people from, like, 50, 100 years ago, and now a real situation happens. It's like life imitating art.
Yeah, very bizarre, very bizarre. I mean, I guess, again, what did people expect? This guy is known for his controversy. So, something, I don't know whose choice this was, the director of the Oscars, Seth MacFarlane. There was an interesting choice made in music. Can you guys think of what I'm about to name?
Are you going to talk about how, like, best song, like, they performed, like, maybe two of the nominees, but then, like, showed, like, the rest of them in, like, brief clips? I thought that was kind of bizarre.
I thought that was bizarre, but that's not what I'm thinking. I'm talking about the actual score for the ceremony.
Oh, the Jaws thing.
The Jaws theme. Yeah. I first noticed it when the Best Documentary Feature Award winner, his speech was going long, and the Jaws theme started playing. And it was funny because the Jaws theme started playing as, like, one of the Oscars ushers came up behind him to tap him on the shoulder and tell him that he was running long. So I thought, like, the Jaws theme was associated with that Oscar usher for a second. Like, should I know who this guy is? But no, that was just what they'd played when the wrap-up music, like, for the wrap-up music, when, you know, wrap up your speech. But what'd you guys think of that choice?
Yeah, it was very awkward at first. Like, it probably would help if they made an announcement maybe to, like, all the nominees that if you hear the Jaws theme, that means it's time to wrap it up, because I could tell that the first guy had no clue what was going on. He was hearing the Jaws theme, but just did not understand that it meant that you're supposed to wrap it up and leave, because he just kept going. So, it is a pretty funny gag, though, to send people off, but I think they should have communicated it to the actual, people on stage so they know what to expect, because that guy had no clue.
You know what I really loved about it, though? It is the kind of thing where it was poorly set up. They really should have set it up a little better, but I liked it, because then as the evening went on, once I was aware of what was happening, as the evening went on, I started thinking, anytime someone was going over long, I was like, oh, na na na, come on, na 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 na, you know. They used it very sparingly, though. I think it could have been a very funny gag. Speaking of speeches that went over long, I really don't think there were many. I mean, most of the big sort of bloated speeches were the major categories. But were there any acceptance speeches besides the major winners that you guys really enjoyed? Because there was actually at least one that I really liked. I've already mentioned Adele's as well.
Well, of course, Quentin Tarantino's was pretty awesome to see him up there again. None that really stick out. Like, I can't think of any that were, like, horribly, like, embarrassing or anything like that, or very awkward. Most of them were just kind of your standard generic Oscar acceptance speech.
TK, were there any speeches that stood out to you?
I'm trying to think, just going over the list, if there was anything that kind of jumped out at me, and I don't think there was.
Well, there, the one that I was thinking of specifically, I mean, there were some pretty good acceptance speeches in the major categories that that we can talk about as we get to them. But the one that I really liked was the acceptance speech from the cinematographer of Life of Pi, a guy named Claudio Miranda. And you'll know him because he had really long white hair.
Oh,
the Film Drunk blog actually has a great picture of him alongside Paul N.J. Otison, the winner of Best Sound Editing for Zero Dark Thirty, and Per Holberg, the co-winner of Best Sound Editing for Skyfall, all of whom have these long hairdos. And the article is titled, A Guide to Recognizing Your Oscar-Winning Coke Wizards. But what I actually really liked about Claudio Miranda's acceptance speech is that I love it when people giving their speeches are like flustered and emotionally affected by it. I love the ones where there's actual like heart behind what they're saying. And he was so flabbergasted that like halfway through he's like, oh God, I can't talk. Wrap it up. I know. My wife, my kids up in the balcony. Thanks. I gotta go. He just sort of wandered off. Jennifer Lawrence, actually, we'll talk about her speech in a bit, but she had a similar sort of reaction that I really, really adored. So let's see. Oh, best joke of the evening, guys. Do you have a vote for best joke of the evening? Cause I have a clear winner in my book.
I can't think of one that stands out. So no, I don't have a specific, vote.
I'm sorry. That Coppola joke still floored me. I thought that was perfect.
Oh, really? That one? Okay. Here's my favorite. The Von Trapp Family Singers.
Ah, yes.
The Von Trapp Family Singers. And then he has a Nazi run and go, they're gone. That was killer. That was such great material. I was in stitches when I saw that. I thought that was so funny as an introduction to Christopher Plummer presenting. So you know what? Props to Seth MacFarlane. That joke right there, that proves that he's got a really good sense of humor for this sort of show business shtick. So, best writing, original screenplay, Quentin Tarantino won. This was another total surprise for me. I thought, I believe I said it on our Oscar podcast, that the Academy didn't recognize Inglourious Basterds with any awards for writing or directing. Then it didn't make sense they'd recognize Django Unchained. But lo, they did. Guys, what did you think of Tarantino's win?
Very, very happy about it. Like, I would have preferred to see him win for Inglourious Basterds because it was probably a better screenplay, but it just hit me that, like, he hadn't won anything in 19 years since Pulp Fiction, and it's like, he may never win Best Director, he may never win Best Picture, but you can always count on him to, the Academy to give him a Best Screenplay award when necessary. So it was just great to see him up there at the podium again, and he looked very genuinely excited and happy to be there, because I seem to remember when he won for Pulp Fiction, he kind of gave like an anticlimactic speech that was kind of short. So this was kind of a time to finally express his love of cinema right there on stage.
And an interesting sort of parallel to Ben Affleck being awarded for Argo being awarded Best Picture in that, you know, Ben Affleck won years ago, very close to the start of his career, for Good Will Hunting, just like Tarantino won very close to the start of his career for Pulp Fiction. And now, all these years later, both those guys are getting the recognition again, but in a very different light since they've come so far since then. I just found that to be a really interesting little parallel. And, yeah, it was a pretty funny speech. TK, Tarantino won. Did you think his speech was at all masturbatory?
I don't think so. The peace out at the end kind of threw me off. Like, I know that's Tarantino, but, like, I'm sorry. I like when there's class at the Oscars, and, like, I'm super pumped Tarantino won, but I'm sorry. You don't say peace out at the Oscar ceremony.
Wait, now, but it's okay for Tarantino to say because he thinks he's black.
Yeah, no, it's not. I still really wanted Moonrise Kingdom to win because I really want Anderson to get some more recognition for
that. Oh, my God. Well, I got a list of snubs that we're going to
get. Yeah, we'll get to snubs. But, like, I was, again, right out of left field for me, but I'm super, super pumped about it.
Yeah, I totally deserves it. I'm once again, much like with Christoph Waltz, I am surprised but very pleasantly surprised by Tarantino's win. So, this brings me, let's talk a little bit about, we sort of skipped over Jennifer Lawrence. Guys, I mean, I think we all sort of knew that Jennifer Lawrence was the shoe-in for this category, even if we didn't necessarily agree with that. But, I don't know, What did you think of her speech? She fell down on the way to the stage, which is...
And Hugh Jackman ran to help her up, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah, and that's like all anybody is talking about now. But I don't know, did you like her acceptance speech? How do you feel in the wake of her winning her first Oscar?
Well, to be honest, I'm actually surprised that no one has tripped before walking with those heavy gowns up those stairs, so I'm surprised it took this long. But I found it endearing, though, that that they decided to give her a standing ovation just to kind of compensate for her falling down, and then she just said, no, it's okay, you don't have to give it to me, just out of sympathy and stuff because I fell. And it was, her enthusiasm was infectious because she clearly looked overwhelmed and emotional to be there, even though she was one of the, like, odds-on favorites to win. And considering how young she is and how quickly she's kind of skyrocketed to success the last few years, it was great to see her such a genuine reaction from her, even though she was having a hard time getting her words out. And have you heard about the whole Jack Nicholson hitting on her backstage thing
that
yet?
Was fucking hilarious.
By the time this podcast is posted on the back row, I will have also posted Jack Nicholson interrupting her interview, which is a pretty hilarious clip, I gotta say. My next note is approaching the end of the ceremony, Daniel Day-Lewis's speech. Definitely want to talk about that. But, before we get to that, I think we all had pretty good scores as far as predictions. I think, Robin, you had the best predictions of any of them, but, were there any other, winners in the major categories that you felt really gave, like, standout speeches? What did you think of Anne Hathaway? A lot of people have been really hating on her, actually.
Because of the dress?
I guess because of the dress is part of it, but also one reviewer likened her to the kid in the class that the other kids hate, but that the teachers love, which I think is kind of accurate. You know, people seem to, even I am not a big fan of Anne Hathaway, but a lot of people seem to like really hate her, like really hate her. And I certainly don't hate her that badly. But I don't know, did you find her speech remarkable at all? Anything noteworthy?
Not really, no. Like, the only thing I remember is people talking about the dress and stuff, but I didn't really sense anything from her personality or something that would make you hate her or anything, because pretty much everyone thought that she was going to be a shoo-in to win, so I don't think it should have been too surprising that she won.
I wonder if it was just, like, over-publicized.
Yeah.
Any other winners that you... Before we get to, like... The really big ones, any other winners that are notable for you?
Not a winner, but I did not know this was going to happen until I watched the ceremony, but the fact that they were giving a Lifetime Achievement Award to Hal Needham for his stunt work.
Yeah.
Think of that, the guy who directed Smokey and the Bandit and Megaforce has an Academy Award. Just that just didn't hit me that the guy who directed Megaforce actually has his own Oscar now. It was just like Roger Corman winning an honorary Oscar last year. It was just so surreal. So I really like that the Academy is recognizing like guys who mostly directed B-movies throughout their career, but they were highly influential. So
they launched so many careers, those guys. Like,
exactly.
They've contributed so many filmmakers to Hollywood.
It's kind of disappointing that they don't let them get speeches anymore. They just kind of get a ceremony the previous night and then a shout-out in the balcony, because I would have loved to have seen Corman and Needham give a full-length speech, but it's just cool to see them there.
Yeah, no kidding. Amour won for Best Foreign Film. Anybody see that coming?
No, not at all.
deservedly so. It deserved more than it got, in my opinion. And Brave won for Best Animated Feature.
Fuck that category. I was pissed when they announced that.
Yeah, I mean, Paranorman was among my favorite films of last year. So, naturally, I was not impressed with their choice. But I also can't say as I was surprised. Was that a surprise to any of you guys?
I really expected Paranorman to win. Like, I really, really did. So it kind of threw me out that it was that Brave walked away with it.
The Academy loves their Pixar. I don't know, Robin. You probably haven't seen many of the animated films yet, have you?
No, I haven't. Like, I've heard from you guys and most people that Brave was far not the best animated film of the year, but I did predict it was going to win. I just felt like the type of film the Academy would love.
You will love Paranorman, Robin. I think
you're
really going to enjoy that one, so I highly recommend that. Yeah, those were the other sort of big winners that I wanted to take note of. There weren't a ton of other really notable speeches. So let's get to some of the big points, starting with Daniel Day-Lewis picking up his Oscar, as we all knew he would. What did you think of his speech? I thought his speech was amazing.
Yes, because it was just so great that we hear so many stories about how he never breaks character and he's just so serious about everything. And I always pictured him as a guy that doesn't have a sense of humor. And then he makes the joke about switching places with Meryl Streep and how he was going to play Margaret Thatcher in The Iron Lady. And everyone just erupted with laughter just because of how unexpected he was. And I also thought it was endearing that he actually looked emotionally overwhelmed, considering how many times he's won before. He still seems pretty honored to win another Oscar.
Yeah, he is the record holder for most wins as a best actor. And not only did he take a jab at his own method acting, after all those method acting jokes, it's sort of appropriate that he made the best one, but he also took a jab at himself for the movie Nine really flopping when he said when he signed on, he had to convince Spielberg that Lincoln shouldn't be a musical. Just brilliant humor. Like, I was really impressed. He got some great laughs. And, boy, you know, he became, like, my Oscar hero of this year when he gave that speech. I, too, thought that he was just totally humorless. So to have him make the best method acting joke about himself in such a perfect way, like, he couldn't have picked a better moment to whip that one. I wonder how long he was sitting on that. Or if it just came to him, he's like, Meryl Streep is presenting my Oscar. Ah. TK, did you enjoy it as much as I did?
Yeah, no, I really did. Danny kept it classy, which I thought was pretty awesome. I did really like the Streep joke. He has the most best picks, best acting
best actor,
Oscars,
yep.
Now. Good for him. Like, well deserved. Like, I was really, like, I was happy he got it. And we knew it was going to happen anyway. So, but no, I liked his acceptance speech a lot. Again, one of the sessions of keeping it classy.
Yeah, put a great smile on my face.
And another great joke. I want to thank my wife, who spent the last 18 years living with many different men.
Love
yeah, many
one.
Different strange men. And I'm sure each one on their own was plenty strange, but all of them together. Yeah, that's really good. And man, he really pulled that one off. I was really impressed.
And we'll see him again in 5 years.
I'm sure we'll see him again when he wants an Oscar next. So that brings us to, like, the big two. And guys, this was a place where I was really surprised. Best director, Ang Lee for The Life of Pi? Guys, I don't think any of us predicted this.
No.
No. Let me just review our bets. I bet on Ben Zeitlin. Robin, you were on Spielberg, weren't you?
Yeah.
And TK, who did you have your money on?
For director?
Yeah.
I actually thought Russell might win.
Russell. So none of us predict this one. Let's get some reactions, guys. Did Life of Pi deserve that?
Well, I was having alarm bells go off in my head when he won, because I kept thinking, well, Life of Pi has won a lot of technical awards tonight, and Argo has barely won anything, and it's like, oh my god, don't tell me Life of Pi is going to win Best Picture. But I don't think it was definitely, like, we've given our opinions on it before. I don't think Ang Lee deserved to win the award, but he seems like such a nice guy up there on stage. I've heard, like, so many good things about him as a person that I was kind of happy to see him finally win an Oscar after being in the industry for so many years. So even though I wasn't a fan of the movie, I was kind of happy to see him finally get a Best Director Oscar.
Didn't he win for Brokeback Mountain, though?
Did he win Best Director?
He did, and what's neat is that he's won Best Director twice now, but neither of the movies that he was nominated for Best Director for won the Oscar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Brokeback Mountain didn't win Best Picture that year. So very, very interesting sort of attitude that the Academy has towards this guy. But you're right, he does seem like such a nice guy, a very kind soul from just the way he acts. TK, do you think he deserved this?
Nope.
Pine Sol, but screw that guy.
But to be fair, like, Life of Pi, like, whenever they show the clip and he was talking about when he first read the book and he said to himself, this is unfilmable, the fact that he was able to pull it off, good for him. I get that. But not best directing. I was really pissed. Sorry, I know we're heading into the big category soon. Did we talk about best supporting actress?
No. Well, I touched briefly on Anne Hathaway's speech, but did you have any other thoughts?
We'll talk about snubs later, right?
Right. Yes.
Okay. I'll talk then.
All right. And then, so let's get the big one out of the way then. Best movie, Argo. Argo.
Woo!
Fuck yourself. Robin, you were the only one who really saw it coming. You had conviction behind your choice that Argo would win.
And I changed my mind later on, but then it wound up winning anyway.
Yep. You called it like way out there, way off the bat. I don't know. Did it deserve to win? What a surprise that it won without Ben Affleck being nominated as Best Director.
Yeah, I was really happy to see it win. Like, I listed it as my second favorite film of the year behind Django Unchained, so I got no problems with it at all. But I'm still wondering if this is an Academy first, where this is the first time it's won Best Picture without the director getting a Best Director nomination. And I'm kind of wondering if it set a record for, like, fewest Academy Awards won for Best Picture winner, because I think it won Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Editing, but I can't think of another Best Picture winner that has had so few awards in the same year.
No kidding. It was a surprise. I for a while there, I really did think that it would take it, just because it won so many... so many of the other awards, like so many other award ceremonies. But as the night went on and it won just like a handful of Oscars, I was surprised to see it take the big one home. On that note, though, I've got to say, my prediction for Beasts of the Southern Wild, not only was it off, but it was so off, I don't think that movie won a single Oscar.
Yeah,
sure as fuck
didn't.
Not a single one. I must admit, I am kind of shocked. Not because I'm a huge champion of that film, but boy, it seemed like real Academy Award fare. So, Argo, other thoughts on Argo? Oh, you know what? My immediate thought when Argo won was, wait, the guy from True Lies produced Argo?
I recognized him!
Grant Heslov, who was, he played a side character in the movie True Lies, and a decent side character as well. And he's acted in a few other things too, but he's a producer? I had no idea. None whatsoever. So that was a real shock for me. But I like that he went up and he took the mic first, and he said, I took the mic first because Ben Affleck can't thank Ben Affleck, the director. And I want to thank Ben Affleck, the director. A real sort of stab at the Academy for snubbing him in that category. But, yeah, that was a real surprise to me. And
yeah, that was cool because like he apparently acted for a while and then became good friends with George Clooney and they produced a ton of movies together. And I thought it was cool that Clooney let him have the mic and get all the attention because he's kind of an unsung guy, because Clooney, I don't think, said anything during that acceptance speech.
Yeah, I think Clooney was quiet for most of the night except for when he presented an award. What did you guys think of Ben Affleck's acceptance speech? I thought it was kind of sweet. I thought it was really funny that he thanked Martin Brest.
Yeah, that was quite hilarious. And I thought it was quite kind of funny too that he was trying to get everything in, and then he got into that really awkward thing where he was talking to Jennifer Garner, talking about our marriage, and he says, "I know it's a lot of work, but we can work at it." It almost felt for a second that he was begging his wife not to divorce him or something like that. But
a lot of people have been saying that, but I didn't think that was the case. Relationships are work, but like he says, it's the best kind of work. It was more honest than most of the speeches, I thought. But yeah, maybe it was a bit awkward too. I thought it was really sweet that he got all choked up when he thanked his kids.
And considering how much we ranted about Zhili a couple months ago, it's nice to see that he's recovered from it quite handsomely.
Yeah, no kidding. Boy, what an interesting trajectory for that guy's career. Like, he started off so strong with Good Will Hunting, and then he took a serious dip with his acting career to the point where he had to, like, give up acting for a while and become a director just to salvage his reputation. But now, he really does, it does seem like he's going to be, like, this next Clint Eastwood-like director, a director that can do really good dramatic films really well.
I was hoping, though, for a cameo from Jay Muse at the end just to say, yo, Affleck, Phantoms was the bomb, yo!
Yeah, you, Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms!
That would have been such a great capper to the ceremony.
That would have been amazing. Now, aw, I didn't think of that, but Robin, you have, I am disappointed because that didn't happen. So, let's move into the snubs and also the Hollywood Reporter article that I linked you guys to, because this is really interesting, and this will also tie into our discussion of whether or not the Oscars are relevant anymore. But let's talk about the snubs first. I got a long list of movies that were snubbed, both for nominations and for wins. But I don't know. TK, do you want to start us off? Do you have any snubs? It sounded like you had one you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I'm just going to go through a list really, really quick here. I, honest to Christ, thought Amy Adams deserved the Best Supporting Actress, and I'm really – like, I knew Anne Hathaway was a shoe-in, which really upset me because I think she's a little bit – I think the media has kind of overblown her Les Mis thing, because I really think – Adams has been nominated, I think, 3 or 4 times now, and she hasn't won yet. She was incredible in The Master. She should have got that. I really think she should have. We talked briefly earlier, Paranorman should have won Best Animated. And hang on a second, sorry. Let me zip through here.
Don't worry, we're not going to start the Jaws theme.
I'm really upset Life of Pi won cinematography.
Really, yeah, you know what? You know,
I really wanted Skyfall to win it. Because Skyfall was beautiful.
Deacons deserved it.
What's that?
Roger Deakins for Skyfall definitely deserves it.
So, okay, so I have a great idea, guys. Let's give Best Cinematography, which is about using the camera as a tool to make something look beautiful, let's give it to the movie that's entirely CGI. Mm. I'm sorry, I think that's the stupidest goddamn award that they gave out. I'm very happy that there was a tie.
The tie was a surprise. I think that's only the sixth tie ever in the Academy Awards.
Yeah, and you know what? And I'm glad those two won. I thought that was great in terms of Skyfall and Zero Dark Thirty winning for that. I thought it was fantastic. Which is sort of just against her weird, but I'm still going to come back. Amy f***ing Adams should have won that Oscar. I was really upset. But, like, again,
I'm far more upset about Roger Deakins. far more upset. I don't think he's won a single Oscar yet. He's been nominated 10 times? He's been nominated for 10 different Oscars. Let me just read you some of this man's filmography. True Grit, Doubt, No Country for Old Men, A Beautiful Mind, The Shawshank Redemption, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, The Big Lebowski, Fargo. Like, Barton Fink, come on. Why does this man not have an Oscar for Best Cinematography? He is clearly a genius. Snubbed again. Sorry, any others, TK?
No, those are my big ones.
Robin? Robin, do you have any Oscar snubs, but either Oscar nomination snubs or Oscar win snubs from this year?
None of the wins this year, I think, pretty much upset me. Like, I would have preferred to see Jessica Chastain probably win Best Actress, but I got no real objections to Jennifer Lawrence winning, so I can't really complain about any of the categories. Couple of things that I thought should have been nominated, like, we mentioned that I really wanted Leonardo DiCaprio to get a nomination for Django Unchained because he doesn't play these type of villains too often, and he was terrific, but I guess because he's played so many other high-profile roles, they didn't think it was good enough to get an Oscar, but I really would have liked to have seen that happen. Of course, I think they really screwed Ben Affleck over and should have given him a Best Director nomination, because I think he probably would have won if he'd been nominated. Also, Looper, I'm kind of disappointed, wasn't nominated for, like, anything at all, which is kind of a shame. I think maybe it could have won in some of the technical categories, at least, like cinematography and sound design or something, so it was kind of a shame.
The previous Academy Award winner for Juno, Jason Reitman, right?
Yes.
He was championing Looper for Best Original Screenplay, and if I had my druthers, it totally would have won, because, man, it deserved – it was such a unique movie and definitely one of the most memorable of the year. But also, Looper getting snubbed in Best Editing, particularly for that amazing montage sequence that we keep talking about. That alone, I would give just that sequence an Oscar for Best Editing, because it was so good.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of a shame. Also, the only performance this year that wasn't nominated that I thought really should have was Richard Gere in the movie Arbitrage, which I thought was, like, criminally underrated. It got a bit of Oscar buzz for him, like, in the summer, but it just didn't take off. But I thought he – I'm not a big Richard Gere fan, but I thought he was terrific in it, and at the very least should have gotten the Best Actor nomination instead of Hugh Jackman, I think.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I know anybody who thought Hugh Jackman's nomination was really earned. So we've mentioned a couple of them. Looper for Best Original Screenplay, Paranorman for Best Animated Feature, Roger Deakins for Skyfall, and Ben Affleck and Tarantino both snubbed for Best Director nominations. DiCaprio snubbed for Django Unchained. I really wanted more of Moonrise Kingdom. Like, why wasn't that nominated for anything more than Best Original Screenplay? Like, it really – it totally deserved more than that. Best Production Design. I would have given an Oscar to Moonrise Kingdom for Best Production Design, because what I as I talked about in our review of it, or my review of it, it, like, evoked serious feelings of nostalgia and, like – old memories of cottages that I'd been to and, like, you know, places I – forests I'd walked through. It was a very evocative film in terms of its production design. And, man, deserved a lot more than the Academy gave it, which – nothing. The Academy gave it nothing. As I said in our lead-up to the Oscars, I probably would have given Emmanuelle Riva the Oscar for Best Actress for Amour, because she's great. She was – really brave in Amour, and I was one of the few who, like, actually kind of adored that movie. The more I think about it, the more I really adore it. It probably sounds so funny to you, Robin, because you didn't like it at all.
No.
But yeah, I'm, oh boy, some of those scenes actually give me chills, as silly as that is, I gotta say. I need more people to see this and be on my side so I can feel like I'm not crazy and I actually love something. Just a little culture, guys. I'm trying to put the culture in film culture.
That director who filled out the ballot's not going to agree with you, though.
No, God, no. I was surprised that The Imposter wasn't nominated for Best Documentary. I don't think it would have won. It wasn't an issues documentary that the Academy Awards really love. But as far as compelling documentaries that I've seen from the past year, The Imposter was really good, like edge-your-seat stuff. And those are my – oh, and actually, one more, Holy Motors. Why wasn't that nominated for Best Foreign Film? It was one of the only foreign films that everybody was talking about for a while in 2012. Like, it caused a lot of stir, and it was another very avant-garde foreign film that I really enjoyed. I got a big kick out of it, heck, I'd probably say that Denis Levant, the star of Holy Motors, I'd say he deserved an Oscar nomination for his multiple performances in that film, because not only were they really brave, but they were, like, really out there, and he played some very interesting characters. So I'm shocked that there was really no love for Holy Motors. Oh, man, you know where else they could have nominated? They could have nominated it in Best Music, or even Best Original Song for that amazing intermission accordion number in a church. That sequence alone is one of the best, one of my favorite moments from last year. So no love for Holy Motors, no love for Emmanuelle Riva, no love for Moonrise Kingdom, no love for Roger Deakins, so little love for all these great properties. No, not none of them even mentioned. Such a shame.
And I know there was no chance in hell this was going to get a nomination, but it would have been cool to see Matthew McConaughey get one for Killer Joe. Just to see what kind of sketches that Seth MacFarlane would have come up on stage to reference the chicken scene.
Heck, you know, it was such a shocking scene. He could just go up on stage eating a piece of chicken, and it would have stirred up some controversy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So those are our snubs. I'm trying to think if there's anything we missed as far as the ceremony goes. It's so hard because the ceremonies go on for 3 hours, but I don't think we missed anything.
What about Michelle Obama doing the presentation for Best Picture? And all I can think was, what if the best picture had been like a controversial film like Django Unchained or Zero Dark Thirty? I kind of have a gut feeling that they wouldn't have had her do it if it wasn't a safe movie like Argo that was going to win Best Picture.
I was really, really hoping that it would turn out to be Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
Because that would have been so funny. Oh my gosh. Yeah, boy. But yeah, it was a sort of a Go America movie. Thank goodness they thanked Canada, which is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think that at that point we knew it was going to be a safe bet.
Yeah, exactly.
So guys, let's talk about, we can sort of jump back and forth between this Hollywood Reporter article that we keep referencing and also you know, the question of, do the Oscars actually mean anything anymore? Over the past few years, particularly, I'd say the last 5 years especially, it keeps feeling like the Oscars are really desperate to remain relevant. Like anything that's 85 years old, they're scared that they're losing touch with, you know, I guess with the present. They're over the years, they always smack of this kind of desperation to remain relevant, to remain significant, because young people seem to view these things as, you know, these stuffy ceremonies where, I think it was Billy Crystal who put it this way, where he said it's, you know, when he was the host, he was saying it's a stuffy ceremony where a bunch of white people give golden statues to each other.
Yeah, nothing takes away the sting of an economic recession like watching millionaires give each other gold-plated statues.
Precisely. And I feel like a lot of people really just see the Oscars that way. A lot of people of our generation and younger, anyway. Maybe even just younger. I really can't speak. I am not we three are not an accurate sample of how the general population of our generation views movies and the Academy Awards. Seth MacFarlane, as I said before, it kind of felt like stunt casting. Like they were trying to appeal to a younger crowd, his fans from his multiple shows like American Dad and Family Guy and The Cleveland Show. So with that being said, I pose the question to you guys. Are the Oscars relevant?
Well, I think they'll always be relevant just because they've been all on around so long, but it is kind of funny to think of it like how there are just so many awards like the Golden Globes and stuff around, and I always wonder what makes the Oscars any different than any of these other awards that they're giving out, and I think it's just because it's been around longer than any of the others. So it's always going to be around, but it's like when we were doing our prediction show, like every time we were predicting categories, we were saying we're not going by regular logic, we're going by Academy logic, because you watch this and you know that you make your predictions just on the way that the Academy traditionally does things. Like, you don't do it as a normal person does. And I don't know if everybody who watches the Oscars do that, or if we're just the type of people, because we're film buffs, who, like, do those type of predictions. But it's so funny, like, how, like, so many of the categories are just so predictable. You know who's going to win. And then you get something like Ang Lee winning Best Director that you almost think was done there just to surprise people so that the Oscars aren't as predictable. So, yeah, I guess a lot of people just, like, they still view it as kind of like a big joke or something like that. But they still watch it just because it's a tradition. But I don't think people take it as seriously as they used to.
Certainly not. And, you know, more and more, particularly as, like, political correctness is spreading through our society, the Oscars have often come up, they try very obvious ploys to attract a younger audience, like having a pair of young actors like Hathaway and Franco. But, you know, neither of them really – James Franco certainly did not seem interested in being there. So they keep on trying to appeal to this younger audience, but they don't seem to really like that younger audience. It is all very stuffy, and there are, like, a lot of race issues associated with the Academy Awards that, as racism becomes a more talked-about subject in our society, these offenses of racism – are all the more glaring. I think it was last year that there were statistics released that revealed that something like 80, I think it's around 80%, maybe a bit more, but the majority of Academy voters were old white guys. Like
93% male, 77% white.
Exactly. Like that's problematic. It is very clear that not everybody is being well represented within the Academy voters. And that's certainly what you'll see with this Oscar voter brutally honest ballot that I'm going to talk about in a moment. Apparently the Hollywood press was really cruel to Kevanjanae Wallace, for no real reason. They kept getting her name wrong. The Onion blatantly out and out insulted her in like a really unfunny way that you can read about, but I don't want to get into here. But, there was one year where it's like the Academy was making a very deliberate point to award major awards to black people. This was the year that Halle Berry won for Best Actress, Denzel Washington won for Best Actor, and they gave Sidney Poitier the Lifetime Achievement Award. And of course, I have no problem with any of that, but having all of those awards in the same ceremony really felt like it was the Academy trying to be like, see, we're inclusive, right, guys? All you white guys, you're with me, right? We're inclusive. We did it. And this year, they had... like even Nicole Kidman had in her presentation speech where she says it's really remarkable that a story about an African-American family that lives in poverty could be nominated for an Academy Award. And all I could think of was, why is that remarkable? That shouldn't be anything unusual. Of course that kind of movie should be able to get nominated for an Academy Award. Like why even point that out? But it really feels like the Oscars are getting more and more out of touch. And something, however, like that, I kind of realized that this goes way back. Alfred Hitchcock never won an Oscar for any of his movies. He only ever won it as a Lifetime Achievement Award, like Roger Corman. It's sort of a perfect illustration of how the Academy does not have its finger on the pulse of cinematic influence. Hitchcock and Corman have launched more filmmakers' careers than a lot of the Best Picture winners. And Seth MacFarlane even makes a great joke about it, where he says, getting an Academy Award instantly launches your career, right? Look what happened to Jean Dujardin. He's everywhere now. and he really isn't. I don't know, do you guys have any thoughts on any of that? Am I way off the mark?
It's so funny, people have made a joke how, like, the year that Denzel Washington won, it's like all the other great roles he's had where he's been nominated where he hasn't won, but it's the one year where he's playing, like, an evil black guy who kind of speaks in stereotypical gang lingo saying, I'm the police and stuff, where they give him the Best Actor, and I know a lot of people debated that year if he should have won, but it's almost like, oh, we're going to do this to have the theme of all these black Academy Award winners, even though he's playing kind of a stereotypical character. So yeah, you're not off on that one. I totally see that it's kind of like an effort of a bunch of old white guys trying to show that they're not racist and stuff, and it shows that they are kind of out of touch.
TK, do you have any thoughts on that matter?
Nothing that hasn't already been said, really. I don't know what I can say to enhance that.
Well, then here's what we can do, is we can comment on this. We've referenced it so many times. Let's get into this Hollywood Reporter article. The Oscar voter is anonymous. Scott Feinberg is the author of the article. It appeared in the March 1st issue of the Hollywood Reporter magazine, but... it's also available online through their website. And this is another illustration of how out of touch the Academy voters really are. The commentary that this guy does is kind of despicable. Are there any categories, any comments that this guy makes that really stood out to you as being, like, shocking?
Well, the fact that he said too much diaper changing for me, and especially the Quentin Tarantino thing, how it's Tarantino masturbation. Like, you can tell that this is someone who probably never liked Quentin Tarantino to begin with and just can't stand the success that he's had. I know a lot of people like that, kind of stuffy old film professors who just don't like the idea that this guy didn't go to film school and have a traditional upbringing, and and pretty much made these movies all on his own, and they just hate him for it. And I kind of saw it from this guy that he just has a grudge against Quentin Tarantino his whole life and will just say these things about him just because he hates him.
Absolutely. This the whoever this voter, this Oscar voter is, he really allows, he does not judge just based on a performance or just based on a movie. He judges the person. Mm-hmm. And like here is some of his commentary on the best director category that really just bothered me. He goes, Life of Pi is well directed, but I was put off by the religious message at the end. Beast of the Southern Wild, I know many people loved it, but I got seasick, and I found it almost impossibly boring. Amour is purely a performance piece. Besides, Michael Haneke just pissed me off in the past because he's made movies that are misanthropic. He hates human beings, and I happen to be a human being, and I don't like being shit on. Like, really, dude? You really think that that is what Michael Haneke, like, he hates human beings and he's shitting on the audience? Or, for example, I don't even care about who won the best costume design because I thought there was some pretty, like, Snow White and the Huntsman. It really just does not do it for me. But this guy's commentary on best costume design really bothers me. He says here, Lincoln is out for me. I just don't want to support Anna Karenina, even though it's probably going to win because it's exactly the kind of movie that does win this award. People who haven't seen the film are going to vote for it because it just has that smell. But I'm going to go for Snow White because you had the knights in the shining armor, and then you had the more mythical costumes and on and on. like what the hell,
man? Smell.
Yeah, it has that smell. You know, pretty dumb. And, I mean, it really bothers me as well. He hasn't seen any of the best documentary shorts. I mean, I will admit, I didn't see any of the best documentary shorts, but if I got a voted them, by God, I would watch them. Really, really bothered me. Are there any other comments that you guys thought particularly egregious?
Well, just the fact when he picks out things that have nothing to do with the movie or with the performances, ways that people lost their vote. Like, he had the one about Jennifer Lawrence. I was going to vote for her, but she lost me with that Saturday Night Live bit.
Oh, yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones, he looks like such a bitter guy. I'm not voting for him. And it's like, well, what's that got to do with his performance and stuff? Like, it's just showing, like, his weird personal prejudices for his votes. Like,
unless
it's nothing to do with his personal opinion.
In that same category, best actress, I don't vote for anyone whose name I can't pronounce. Her parents really put her in a hole by giving her that name. The truth is, it's a very sweet but immature performance from a 9-year-old. I've directed children. They probably did 1,000 takes and put the best ones together. Screw you, dude.
Yeah.
That's what they do for everybody. You put the best takes together. Yeah.
It didn't have a high budget. They probably didn't do 1,000 takes on that movie.
TK, we're sort of hogging the spotlight here. Were there any, like, parts of this article where you were just fuming?
Just the ones that you guys actually point out were the ones I was going to talk to. But just, like, again, you guys already mentioned it, but just the fact that he didn't base it on the performance was enough to really piss me off. But
how about this one? I rule out Christoph Waltz because this is a fake nomination.
Well, see, but that's the thing. That's the thing that I was talking about earlier, right? Because he has so much screen time. The fact that he's a supporting actor
doesn't matter. But he's I understand that. But don't vote for him because it's a fake nomination. Like, come on, man. I understand. Like, he should be getting a Best Actor nomination for it. But really, like. But I'm not voting because it's the wrong category.
They do that all the time. They put lead actors in best supporting actor categories because they got a better chance of winning there. So
yeah, look at Haley Steinfeld and True Grit. Allow me to point to another prime example. let me see. What other ones? You know, best original screenplay. Well, Amour is disqualified. It's just a woman dying. There's no real story, and it made me feel like shit. If Tarantino had never made a film and this was his first screenplay, I might consider it. Moonrise Kingdom, it's a personal thing, but I don't like this guy's movies.
Like, that sounds like Robin.
Yeah, exactly.
but at least, you know, Robin, I bet if you voted for it, you would at least judge the movie on its own merits.
Yeah, this, I legitimately don't think it's the best screenplay, but it's not a personal thing, as he puts it.
Exactly. It's not, yeah. Oh, man. It's really problematic for me. And this is, you know, I don't know if, I can't really speak to whether or not this is an accurate representation of all Academy voters. I sure hope it isn't. But these kinds of commentary, this kind of commentary, it's all like, it really does make you feel like whoever this is, whoever this judge is, just is out of touch. Let me read you, I'm going to read you the full blurb that he does for Best Picture. And like so much of this bothers me. He says, this is a preferential system. I'm putting Amour at number 9 because I'm just pissed off at that film. Beast of the Southern Wild is a movie that I just didn't understand. So that's my number 8. Let me pause here, guys. You understood Beast of the Southern Wild, right?
Yeah. I thought it was overrated, but I knew what was going on.
Yeah, I at no point was I ever confused by Beast of the Southern Wild, whether or not I enjoyed it. Mm. So that's my number 8. Les Miserables goes in 7th place. It's not just the most disappointing film of the year, but the most disappointing film in many years. So let me get this straight. He puts his most disappointing film of the year at number 7 over 2 films that it's like he just didn't get them. I don't know. In number 6, I'm putting Silver Linings Playbook, which is just a blah film. Django Unchained will go into my 5th slot. It's a fun movie, but it's basically just Quentin Tarantino masturbating for almost 3 hours. Next up is Life of Pi because of how unique it is and for holding my attention up until its irritating ending.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, Argo is going to go in 3rd place, but I don't want it to win because I don't think it deserves to win, and I'm annoyed that it's on track to win for the wrong reasons. Actually, come to think of it, do we have to put a film in every slot? Because what I want is for my best picture choice to have the best possible shot. So I even give any support to the others. I'm basically okay with one of 2 films winning. Lincoln is going in my 2nd slot. It's a bore, but it's Spielberg. It's well-meaning and it's important. Zero Dark Thirty is my number 1.
So it's a bore, but it's my 2nd slot. That makes perfect sense.
Just such odd logic applied to this. No logic, really. This is all just like, whatever. I don't want to give preference to any movies that I don't think are going to win. I didn't understand this one. So even though this other one was the most disappointing film of the year, because I didn't totally understand the other one, that one's worse. Like, it is just, I get that film criticism is very subjective, but like, do your homework, man. Come on now. You're supposed to be representing, like, the finest. You're choosing what movie is the most, like, prestigious of the year. And I just felt like this was thrown together with so little effort. Another example of how the Academy Awards are kind of out of touch. But, you know, I kind of feel like we haven't really answer the question of, are they still relevant? Like, are you excited for next year's awards? Do you think more people will tune in next year?
Well, I can't say I'm ever really excited to watch them anymore. Like, I tune in every year, but it's not something I, like, hotly anticipate or anything. Because basically the fun of it now is, like, watching it and seeing if our picks hold up and if our predictions from our podcast hold up. And then, well, seeing certain spots and thinking, what are we going to talk about on our next podcast? Like, that's the fun of it for me now rather than just, like, sitting and watching the awards.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I have a lot more fun talking about the Oscars than I do actually watching the Oscars.
I love watching the Oscars. I think it's, I look forward to it every year, and I have so much fun with them. So it's, I'm looking forward to next year. Seth raised viewership, I think, 30% this year,
yep,
which is super awesome. And, hopefully people enjoyed it enough that they're going to come back next year. So like, I love Oscar season. Like I was saying it last night to my buddies. Like it's, I go, I sit and I have a bunch of beer and watch. Like it's, I love it. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I'm personally, I think the meaning of the Academy Awards, the prestige of the Academy Awards is fading, and I don't think the Academy Awards are ever going to be as important or prestigious as they have been in past years, but I do think that more people are going to start tuning in with controversy. You know, it's like they say, there's no press is bad press. I'm sure all the controversy has attracted new viewers. Now people are going to want to tune in to see, oh, you know, what edgy thing is the host going to do? So yeah, I think the viewership is going to go up, but I think the significance is going to go down. And that's my prediction. Any final thoughts on the Oscars before we wrap up this episode?
Well, I'm happy to say that this is one of the years where one of my genuine favorite films of the year actually did win Best Picture, and we can't say that about too many years, so
I give
it credit for that.
It's really true. You know what? This is a year where, in my opinion, the Academy showed surprising taste. And, of course, I'm saying that because they picked the movies I liked.
Well,
but I was surprised at the number of Tarantino wins, and, the Academy made some really good choices. They snubbed a few, but they actually picked some really good winners.
What I really liked about this year is that nothing swept. Like, there wasn't there wasn't one movie that stole everything, which I really don't like. The fact that there was so much variety in this year's Oscars, and the fact that they gave awards all, like, left, right, and center, I was really, really happy with, and I hope it's something that continues over the next little while. Unless a movie is fantastic. Like, when The King's Speech won a whole bunch of the awards, I was super happy with that. So, like, that's okay. But there was nothing overwhelming about this year's picks, and I really like that.
Yeah, I think I've covered just about everything. Any final thoughts, Robin?
Nope, I think that's about it.
More sci-fi. Let's have some more sci-fi, Academy. You can do it. There's good, smart sci-fi out there. More Inception-style stuff. You had it with Inception, you know.
Oh, I should also say, very happy that Twilight swept the Razzies. And I know you're happy, TK, because you actually had to sit through it.
Yeah, that's right.
It was so bad.
Yeah, thank goodness that Twilight is finally getting the Razzie treatment that it really deserves. I'm sure everybody at the Razzies were really laughing at how Kristen Stewart looked at the Academy Awards. Boy, she did not look her best. Hey, guess what? It's time for the Dumb Joke of the Week. Did you guys know that Neil Diamond started off his career under the name Neil Cole? He changed it when the pressure got to him.
Oh, my God.
If you want to get in touch with us, let us know what you think of the Oscars. You can do so by email. Contact TK by emailing tk@the-back-row.com. Be sure to peek behind the velvet rope for the steamy side of the back row. Robin can be reached by emailing robin.warder@the-back-row.com. Be sure to check out Robin's regular features, Robin's Underrated Gems, and Before They Were Stars. And you can reach me by emailing gil@the-back-row.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.